Hello and welcome to Pop a la Carte number 130. This week we get to talk about WandaVision. Some DC news, including a brief review of the Snyder Cut. No spoilers. Raya and the Last Dragon, which just dropped on Disney Plus. The what is it called? The like extended extra special thing that you have to pay for. It's on Disney Plus, but you had to pay a lot of money.
Yeah, there's just like another paywall. I don't even know what you call it.
Well, there's Disney a special Plus name for it. I can't even
Disney
remember.
Disney Plus anyway. Premium? Disney?
Disney anyway. Plus Plus. Okay. Anyway. Angela has a review of Space Sweepers. And we'll talk about Staged, which just dropped season 2 on Amazon Prime. Anyway, I am Valerie.
I'm Tatiana.
I'm Angela.
And I'm Camille.
Still not awake. Anyway, we'll actually start with just kind of what we've been watching in quarantine as we catch up with the world because we have nothing better to do. I watched Lawrence of Arabia last night for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was excited.
Nice.
It was our anniversary, so we were just like, what do we do? We're like, let's watch a movie. I'm like, hey Matt, I'll even watch a classic movie for you.
So, cool.
That was what he chose. I liked it. It was really good. Yeah. It's very long. Luckily, we took the intermission, you know, and that's when we had dinner. So that was nice. We got a little bit of a break, but it was really good. I liked it. We just finished The Queen's Gambit, finally, which was amazing. Everybody needs to watch that if you haven't yet, but I think we're the last ones to watch it, so I'm sure everybody else has already. But I think that's about it. What about you guys?
Well, I have been watching, aside from, you know, things I need to watch for interviews or whatnot, I pretty much only watch I watch WandaVision, of course, which we'll talk about later, and then, like, my K-dramas, right?
Yeah.
So, so right now, I guess I'm just watching people be insane on Penthouse Season 2, which is about people who are really rich and live in a penthouse, and then some people who are not that rich and don't live in the penthouse, and that makes them real mad. And also, like, everyone's really obsessed with getting the top prize competition at some high school, like, opera course, which I'm like, I did not know that people are like murdering each other over opera, but they really are. They really, really are. So that's what that's about. And it has like 25% ratings in Korea. That means like 1/4 of people who are watching TV in Korea are watching Penthouse. I don't know. But, you know, so it's fun. It's stupid, but fun.
Flash is back now, right? How do you feel about that?
Flash is back. You know what? The second episode was pretty strong for the Flash, IMO. So hopefully it's, you know, it's going to be a better season. Actually, last season was also already a better season. But at that point, it's like you're already just tired. So so I think Eric Wallace overall is a good showrunner. Thank you. We are glad to have passed Todd Helbing on to Superman and Lois so they can do whatever they're doing over there. And yeah, thank you, Flash. Batwoman's going strong, even though they still, you know, have not let go of the idea that Kate might be out there somewhere. And I'm like, I know you're not bringing Ruby Rose back. So what is happening?
Yeah, that's weird.
So yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
I was like, that seemed to have ended badly. I can't even see her coming back for a cameo.
Right. I wish she would, but no. It's not a thing. There was someone is going to come back. Oh, right. America Ferrera is coming back for the finale of Superstore. So you're like, well, that must have done it. That ended well, you know?
Oh, that's good.
So, yeah.
I know so people really love that show. I never watched it. But
I've only watched here and there a couple episodes, but it seems very cute. I can't be mad at it. Who else is watching? Oh, wait. I watched Promising Young Woman. I want to talk about this because have any of you guys seen it?
No, and I really want to.
Yeah.
So yeah. I won't spoil anything for you. It was, I will say, I was deeply invested in it as I was watching. In like the outcome of events, with more so than I have been in any movie I've watched recently.
Uh-huh.
Other than like Moxie, which was super cute. But okay. So I was super invested. And then by the end, I was like, I have a lot of mixed emotions right now. So I think it was really good. I think it was a really good movie, like, technically speaking. And I think it's awesome that chick that plays Camilla in that crown like, wrote and directed this movie. Like, okay, you go, girl. And also she did Killing Eve, so she's just, like, a whatever, all-rounder person. but anyway, so yeah, so it was really, really good, but there was, like, some things that I have, like, a problem with thematically, you know? Or, like, this feels... Not even that, like, oh, this feels problematic, which it might, but, like, if I had liked it, I wouldn't care that it felt problematic, you know what I mean? So there's, like, things that happen at the end that I was like, this was very upsetting to me, and therefore I will deem it problematic. But it was really good.
I know people are, like, super invested in that, like, winning awards, but did it even win anything at the Golden Globes? Which, did anybody watch the Golden Globes, by the way? Cause,
no.
Yeah. I'm giving up on award shows, to be honest. A lot of the... Yeah.
What is the point of them this year, anyway?
Right.
Yeah.
It did not win Golden Globes, but it did win several Critics' Choice Awards.
Okay.
And then it won some Satellite Awards, but, you know, Satellite.
I don't even know what the Satellite Awards are.
Me either. I just know that it is an award. It shows up on Google, but I don't know what that is.
There's too many award shows. That's what that means. Anyway, Camille, what are you watching?
I'm basically watching what we're going to talk about already. I finished Raya, Stage 2, and WandaVision, so nothing in between so far.
How about you, Angela?
I watched Manner of Death, which is a Thai drama. I don't know that I would call it a BL. I mean, it's a whole separate conversation about what constitutes BL specifically. It is about two men who have a relationship, but it's a murder mystery. Like, they are adults, working professionals, and, like, the one guy is so he's, like, technically the forensic doctor, but, like, it's a small village, so he literally does everything. Like, he works at the hospital, he intakes people who come in for emergencies, he, like, gives out vaccines, like, he's also, like, the forensic doctor, and both the coroner and the medical examiner who goes on the scene of crimes. I was like, I really don't think that these are all one job. There's, like, four people who work at the hospital in your town than it is.
Like, maybe in, like, a really tiny town or something.
it's TV. Like, it's clearly, and then, like, the other guy is, like, maybe a tutor, but he's also, like, maybe kind of the boyfriend of the, like, one character who was killed, and so it's them, like, first it's, like, doctor suspecting boyfriend, and then it's them being in love and finding the real murderer and uncovering all the corruption in the town and everything. It's, like, over the top, but in a fun way, and the chemistry is really good, so I like that. And then I'm watching K-drama Uncanny Counter with John, so I'm only watching, like, an episode a week, so on episode 2, but it's about they're demon hunters, basically. They're, like, people who are in a coma can, like, make a deal with, like, good spirits to, like, be revived out of their coma, and now they have, like, super strength and stuff, and they have to go, like, fight down evil spirits. And then, like, new, like, high school kid who actually wasn't in a coma, but, like, the spirit finds him anyway, and it feels very Found Family already. I think it's Studio Dragon, so of course the pacing and, like, the sound direction is excellent. They already, like, Studio Dragon's really good at having that one, like, soundtrack song, you know, that makes everything seem even cooler when it happens. So I'm not really sure what the overarching plot of it is yet, but right now they're just, like, out there ghost busting, basically. And that's fun. It's a fun time. And Tati, I just saw there's a New York Times article about Subway product placement in K-dramas.
Oh, really?
So I'm really amused by that.
That is a couple years late, but
yeah, I'm like, I remember this conversation.
But I just, that hasn't shown up in studio and on Count and Counter yet. But this one, like, it's a K drama, and that it is a drama from Korea, but it is not. It doesn't feel like it's a rom com or anything, which is how I can get John to watch it with me. So if, I don't know, like, demon hunting is your deal. This is, like, a fun, slick, very well produced modern version of that. That is also on Netflix. So
kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun. So that's what I'm
like.
Watch.
One complete story, or is it?
So when I was trying to find the name of the drama, because, like, Netflix, like, went away with our continued watching list yesterday.
Oh, I hate when they do that.
I know. Bring it back. It's like my drama list said there's going to be a season two. And like,
are you talking about Uncanny Counter right now?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, there was going to be a season two, but it's a complete story. You don't have. Yeah, to...
it sounds like I have a feeling it's going to be like. Well, I wasn't sure if they were going to pull like a Kingdom, where Kingdom season one did end on a cliffhanger, and then it was like a year and a half until season two.
It like ends on a cliffhanger in the sense that it's like, oh, here we go again to fight another fight, but it could just as easily be, you know, the end of the show. However, no, there is a. With Uncanny Counter, there was, like, problems inside. The writer quit, like, three episodes before the end because she didn't like the direction that they were going. Oh, and then the director had to write an episode, and then they brought another episode, another writer who's going to do season two for the last two episodes. So I was super worried about that. But in the end, it was, like, I don't know what the problem was because it was fine, you know? The last two episodes weren't as good as the first 13 or whatever, but it was still good.
That ended up better than the most recent Star Wars trilogy when they had that.
Yeah, seriously. That's true.
We're never getting over that. Yeah. All right, well, I actually might watch that one. That sounds really good.
Although, it's really, I'm really enjoying
it. That, we have like our list of stuff that we need to catch up on that's ridiculous that we need to watch. And I keep telling him, I'm like, you know, I'm going to just start watching some of this shit without you because I'm getting sick of waiting. Because there's like certain things that my parents keep trying to talk to me about. Like my parents, they don't have regular television anymore. So they sit and watch stuff on streaming services all the time. They watch way more television than I do now. And so they keep trying to talk to me about things. And I'm like, yeah, I haven't watched it yet. I'm waiting for So I think I'm going to just start with The Last Kingdom because I'm like, I would like to watch it. This is that's like funny. A history I study. I'd like to watch it.
Yes, please watch it. Sorry.
I really want to.
I love The Last Kingdom. Yeah. Super worth it. That's all. Sorry.
Okay. That's all right. I think I am. I'm just going to be like, I'm watching an episode now and either you start right now with me or I'm watching without you. It's just going to happen. Anyway. Moving on. I don't know how to make a transition to the Snyder Cut, so I was trying to think of a way to make a clever transition. There is none that I can think of right now.
Something most people haven't watched.
But will soon? I don't know. Anyway, so Tatiana has seen it.
I have seen it. Oh my god. Okay. I think that tells you everything you need to know, but of course, you know, I'll preface this for anyone who wants to throw tomatoes at me. That I did not go in expecting to like it. I'm just not a fan of, you know, Snyder's filmography in the first place.
Yeah.
So there's not, he would have had to have done something very different from the norm and very different from the end result of Justice League, you know, with the Whedon cut, if you will, for me to have liked it. So he did not do that. But beyond that, beyond just like not really caring for the story, I just think, he makes me feel like I'm good at transitions.
Oh, God.
And I'm really bad at transitions. So, like, the editing, I mean, obviously, if you've already got, like, it's a 4-hour movie, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, if you need 4 hours to tell your movie, then there is a problem. And if it went between, you know, it's going to be a movie, no, it's going to be a 6-part miniseries, so no, it's going to be a movie again, you know? Then obviously, there was, you know, some miscommunications or snafus along the way when you were editing. And that, I think, is very, very evident in this final cut. I think they use, like, chapters to divide it up, but the chapters were not very useful or necessary, and they didn't help at all. So, without spoilers, let me just give you an example of the problem with this man's editing. Okay, so, you know, there's a whole Mother Box situation in Justice League, right?
Yeah.
So, obviously, that's still the main plot here. There's a scene with the Amazons where they're like, we have to contact Diana, right? To tell her about the Mother Box thing. And one of the Amazons is like, but how will it reach the land of men? And then Diana is like, not Diana, Hippolyta, her mom, is like, it doesn't have to reach them. It has to reach her. And then I was like, oh, now we're going to cut to Diana getting the message, right? That's what should happen. That's how transitions work. No, that's not what happened. It took 50 minutes for us to get to the Amazonians then sending the message.
Oh my God.
When they reiterated that they had to send the message and it had to reach Diana. And I was like, I know that from the last time you told me 15 minutes ago. And then still the next scene was not Diana. Eventually she does get that message, but I was like, what the hell? Why did we have to take so long to send Diana this message? So that's like the whole movie. That's this movie. It's just why there's so many scenes that are not necessary and that have no, they just have no reason. I don't remember if this happened in the final cut, the Whedon cut, but you know how, like, for whatever reason, Aquaman is like living with Norse people.
Yeah.
He's just like in some weird, I don't understand why this was happening. It's so stupid. Not only is it just weird, like, I'm like, why is this happening? How is this connected to him? There's this one blonde chick that it then focuses in on, like, super hyper focuses on this blonde chick singing a song for him. Transition from her to Martha, because they're both blonde women, I guess. And I was like, okay! And then she never shows up again. There's no purpose for her. So there you go. But it was a really, like, uncomfortably long, like, focus on her while she was singing. So there you go. There's just things like that. The whole, all 4 hours. There's like a couple of, I think, okay, one thing is like tonally, it's the same, right? As in, not the same as Justice League, but it's all one tone. Like the problem with Justice League was that it was a little bit schizophrenic in its tone, right? It was like, somber, sad, glum times. And then it was like, LOL, let's make some sex jokes on this newscast. So all the jokes were cut out. I guess they were all Whedon. No jokes in this version of
Justice League. They did feel like Joss jokes, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So in that sense, it's better because it's more cohesive in tone.
Considering all the controversy surrounding Ray Fisher, and does he actually get a story?
Oh, you know what? I should have said that. I'm such an asshole. Yes, he does. It is much better. It's the best part of that, for sure.
So you can see why he was a huge Zack Snyder fanboy then.
Yeah, for sure. Like that, him, and then secondarily, Barry. Their stories are much more interesting, and also they're, like, connected. Because, of course, as we can already tell from the little pieces that we got, it's about their dads, right?
Yeah.
Their dad, and how they relate to their dad. So that part is good. The only parts where I felt emotions while watching the Snyder Cut were definitely the Vic and his dad parts. And the only part that was really well edited, like, that was actually really good transitions, was near the end, also relating to Vic and his dad. And it was happening, and I was like, oh my god. This is so good. How did this happen? And then I was like, this is the great ending for the movie. And then it didn't end. So then I was like, okay, never mind.
Oh, no.
But anyway. So yes. Yes. Ray Fisher got a lot more to do. Sucks that they, like, basically hacked away his storyline in Justice League. And, you know, now we are where we are.
I keep feeling like Snyder is basically trying to tell us that he's taking control again, which is not what really should be happening. So does it feel like, does the story have an ending, or does it feel like he's leaving it so that he can hopefully make more movies?
Oh, he definitely left it. So, like, this is where I would go if I got to do more, but I don't think he's going to get to. I think it's just, like, he really wants you to know where he wanted to go.
I'm not planning to watch it, because I wasn't I think Watchmen is great, but that's like the only thing I've really liked of Zack Snyder's. And that movie works for his style.
Right.
300's okay, but I thought he was the wrong choice for DC, and it just, to me, proved that they didn't have any idea what they were doing and how to tell the story.
Right.
But we're talking about maybe doing a hate watch, which we've like via Discord, but we've talked about this before for Batman vs Superman, which I still have not seen, because I said I was the only way I was going to watch it was if we hate watch it, because
right,
I heard
such
bad things afterwards. Anyway, but what I did do was Richard sent me the like breakdown of what apparently Snyder's vision for the story was. For if he had been able to make the three movies that he originally wanted to make, because he was going to do two, and then there was talk of three, and then it only became one, and then he didn't even get to finish it. Mm-hmm. And so basically, literally, I can break this down to Lois is carrying Bruce Wayne's child, and that saves the world.
What?
I'm not even fucking kidding you. I'm not even kidding you.
Are you serious?
Oh, I'm not kidding you.
I have so many questions.
So what, like, there's a lot more to it, and some of it sounds kind of interesting, but because this is your main plot point of what saves the world, it throws everything out. Like, I'm not kidding you. It was bad fan fiction reading this. I was like, what? Some of it, I'm like, okay, that could be cool. But then you brought it back to this. So yeah, basically what happens is that, like, Lex is getting his League of whatever the villains are. Together, and they're all trying to figure out how to stop him. And so Darkseid is coming in at the same time, and it's all these problems. And there's a scene where they're in the Batcave, and Superman is back, but he doesn't really feel like he can be Clark. And Lois and Bruce are having a conversation, and like, he says, "I know." And she's like, "You're not the father." And he's all depressed, and something happens right after that, and he dies.
What?
No, wait. He doesn't die. Who dies? Somebody dies. He doesn't die. That's right. Not at that point. Basically, Lex, like, whatever his plan is, works. But Darkseid ends up getting whatever it was Lex was doing.
Okay.
And the entire world is destroyed. Like, you watch Wonder Woman die, you watch Aquaman die, you watch basically everybody die. I think the only ones who are still alive are Bruce, Barry, and it's Victor, right? For Cyborg? I thought it's for
Victor.
Yeah, okay. So I think the three of them are alive, except that Victor's only like half his body now. So he's basically just plugged into a computer.
Oh my god.
So something happens and they're way in the future, and it's like, it's Mad Max, right? Mm-hmm. But they're trying to send Barry back, because they realize that they can send him back. But the one good thing that they do is they do good science here, where he's only going to have a very short period of time, because then he's going to be pulled back to the future. Mm. And in order to be like, he can't stay too long in the past. Otherwise he'll be brought back to the future, only for the Earth not to be in the same place anymore.
Oh,
it was like, hey, okay, that's true. That's actually the right kind of science. So, like,
yeah.
I gotta give him props for that. But anyway, so they're like, this is what you gotta do. This is what you gotta tell Bruce. And it's like, you have to stop Lex. And then Bruce pulls him aside, and he's like, yeah, telling me to stop Lex isn't gonna stop anything, because I was already trying to stop Lex. What you have to do is this. And so he whispers into Barry's ear, and Barry's eyes just get big. And then Barry does go back. Mm-hmm. And what he tells Bruce is she lied.
Oh.
So okay. Then Bruce knows that the baby is his.
What?
And so he sacrifices himself, and that's when he dies. And because he sacrifices himself to save his child, it saves the world.
Oh my god.
And so then...
Like, okay.
Really?
Okay.
And then Superman is like, you know, he can hear the heartbeat, right? He's like, yeah. I know it's not mine, but this will make me Clark again. And like, that's how the movie ends.
Okay.
So Superman agrees to raise Bruce Wayne's baby. Yeah.
I mean, good for him. Good for him.
Yeah.
But
yes. The fact that Lois Lane is actually carrying Bruce Wayne's child is what saves the world.
That's so... That doesn't even make any sense at all. But that's cool. I'm glad.
I know. You've got to be kidding me. There's obviously a lot more to it, and I could send you guys the screenshots if you want to read this. But Matt and I just sat there like, what?
That's so... What? And Snyder released this himself?
Yeah, apparently he put it up... I saw a story somebody had written about it. He put it up on Instagram, like whiteboards, but then he took it down right away. But, you know, it's the internet. People catch these things. And so somebody transcribed it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so...
So I was like, wow, that makes Justice League like a much better movie. <'Cause
I'm> It's an upgrade.
Yeah. So, you know, it just even more made me not want to watch the Snyder Cut, because I'm like, if he uses any of this, I don't know. Right. Yeah. So it's dumb. I don't know. I guess I still don't like that. I feel like the trolls are being rewarded.
Right.
Although I do know people who are really excited for it. And so I can't begrudge them that, especially in the current climate. Like, you know, if it makes you happy.
That's true.
Go for it. Mm-hmm. I just. And yeah, it does set a dangerous precedent, in my opinion. Yeah. But you know, whatever. At least I saw something where somebody was, it was actually this morning, I guess Zack Snyder was interviewed, mm-hmm. and said something like, because he feels like Marvel are doing the more action comedy so well, mm-hmm. and he like gave them props for that, that was why he came to DC and pitched more the God darker complex. Side. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he described it, I guess, as like more, yeah, like going into the mythology, mm-hmm. and the gods thing, which would make sense. But the problem is, yeah, but you're still trying to make it gritty and dark and real. And it's like, these are comic book heroes.
Yeah.
That's where your problem is. You could have leaned into that and that would have been great. But you have the wrong vision for what these stories are. So right. much so that DC, you know, you pitched a comic book to them and they were like, nah, we're going to pass on that.
Sad.
So, yeah. But hey, apparently Black Adam is finally filming.
We love that for them.
I know, which, because Matt was actually, had literally just said to me the other day, the same thing with like The Flash, that we'll believe it when we see it. And they were like, there's set photos. And I was like, wow, they're actually doing it.
I know. Okay. I can't believe that Black Adam is actually going to get done faster than The Flash. That's amazing.
Flash should have been such a gimme. Like,
I know, right?
Right.
I would have. There was a time that I was excited for it. I would have seen it. I mean, I remember when the panel when Matt was in the room, because he was in Hall H, mm-hmm. when they announced Batman vs. Superman, and how, like, he sent me the picture of the logo and was all excited. And then we were in the room when they announced Flashpoint, and we were like, it's a bit early for that, but okay. And now it's I had a lot of goodwill, and they've squandered it, unfortunately. It's just really sad. But you were saying, Tatiana, that we are still getting our, if the movie ever happens.
Yes, we will still have our Iris West, Kirstie Clemens, will still be in it, which is, you know, nice, because I guess they did restore her scene in you know, Justice League. The Snyder Cut of Justice League. However, we did lose Billy Crudup, because I think he's in Morning Show. Of scheduling conflicts, etc. I'm like, well, when you signed on to a movie 6 years ago, sometimes
you really can't.
But by the time they actually film, maybe he'll be free again. Who knows?
Yeah, right. But yeah, and it's too bad too, in a way, because like I remember seeing people put like young Billy Crudup next to Ezra Miller, and it was like, yeah, they actually look very similar. So it was believable. Oh yeah, and they also cast the mom, but at the same time, I'm like, poor Nora Allen does is die, so good for you. It is, however, Luisa from Y Tu Mamá También. I don't know if any of y'all watched that movie many, many moons ago.
I did.
Years ago. That's cool.
Yeah, so she is the mom.
That's, you are cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
If the movie ever happens.
If the movie ever happens.
Which we'll, again, believe it when we see it. I mean, I hope at this point it does, I guess. Or are we still not happy with Ezra Miller?
Well, you know, I don't want him to choke me, but I guess it's fine. I don't have any, you know, I'm like, they didn't fire him, so that's, you know, I guess it worked out for them. They were like, it's cool. Your story checks out.
I guess so. I don't know. We'll see. It'd be nice. The movie comes out and they pull it off, although I still don't know how you're gonna have your first Flash movie be the worst thing he ever does.
Yeah.
But, you know, mm-hmm. it depends on where they go with it.
Right.
We'll does see. It just launch another Flash movie outside of the... Because, like, does that reset everything? I don't even know. I don't want to think.
I don't know what they're gonna do. I'm just gonna let it go. Just gonna let them just give me what they want.
I guess that's the thing. You have to, with their movies now, let it exist in its own Yeah. You can't do the same where it's Marvel, but you're always thinking of all the other things. You really just have to let them exist on their own.
Right.
Because, like, are we supposed to accept the... Which Justice League is canon?
It's a good question. I mean, I do think... Yeah, I guess it doesn't... Yeah, at this point, it doesn't really matter, does it? They're just like, eh.
They'll just hand wave what they need to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway. All right. Moving on to something sweet, I guess. Angela, you were watching something on Netflix you wanted to talk about?
It's called Space Sweepers. It's a movie. It's a Korean movie, but there is some English in it, and actually Richard Armitage is in it.
Oh, cool.
And he's the villain, because it's like a futuristic, post-apocalyptic in space. Like, you know, the Earth has been rendered mostly uninhabitable. And so, you know, there's been a colony on Mars, not Mars necessarily, they're working on terraforming Mars, that's it. But there's like a colony on like a satellite, but only for like the rich. It's basically, Richard Armitage is like Elon Musk.
Okay.
Like, you know, if you can afford it and you're privileged and you're lucky, you get to live in his little paradise that's like a satellite colony out, just floating around, just outside of Earth's orbit. Mm-hmm. And, but he's like trying to terraform Mars. And then meanwhile, like there are people who, because this really made me think of Elon Musk, because they're like, we're polluting space so much that now there is like a very hard living to be made by like going, collecting some space junk and turning it in for a pittance or whatever. And so it's about a crew of people who do that, and they're Korean, but like, you know, it tries to be very multicultural because, you know, sure, and it's not space anymore, but the way that the crew worked and its dynamics and everything reminded me a lot of Cowboy Bebop.
Oh my god, we didn't do that.
I'm ready to do Cowboy Bebop whenever you want to.
Okay, that's what I'm going to watch, and I'm going to start immediately.
I love it. I love it.
Because it just, you know, this very, like, they're kind of all sort of just in it for themselves, sort of all just loosely aligned, kind of. But then through the course of the events, you can see how they care about each other more. And John is the one, because I was like, Firefly? And John's like, no, this is Cowboy Bebop. So he's the one who pulled it. But then, so they, through, you know, a series of unfortunate events for them, end up with this little girl who the media is advertising as like this advanced AI that has a bomb in it. So there's like a big reward for it. So then they have to have this, you know, moral dilemma of this child who looks like a small child, but like, you know, they could solve a lot of their problems with that money. But is it really as simple as all of that? You know, is there actually more coming on, going on, and conspiracy and whatever? But it's kind of action comedy, found family drama, evil Richard Armitage.
Evil Richard Armitage.
Yeah. He was even at the very end, like, and I wondered a lot about them filming this, because at first I thought maybe he filmed all of his scenes himself, like, somewhere. Because for a while it was just him with, like, other, like, English-speaking people. Mm-hmm. But then, like, later in the movie he is, like, in scenes with them, and he'll, because the idea is that everybody just has, like, translator buds that they carry around their ear, you know? Mm-hmm. So everyone is just speaking all of their languages. But so later he does have scenes that, like, seem to be in a room with them, but the movie is predominantly in Korean, and it's a Korean movie. But they imply this weird, like, not quite familial, but like familiar, I guess, relationship between him. It's Song Joong-ki is the lead.
Oh yes.
And who's the? I don't want to say the female lead. She's really the only female character. But she's in The Handmaiden and Mr. Sunshine.
Oh yeah. Is it Kim Tae-ri? I don't remember.
Yes, Tae-ri. Yeah, she's the captain of the crew. He's like the pilot, and she's the captain. That's why it kind of felt Firefly to me at first, because it was like very, you know, everybody had these seemingly clearly defined roles, but it really is much more like Cowboy Bebop. Mm. Like, and better for it. Put it that way. And yeah, I mean, sweet and fun. It's Song Joong-ki has a backstory that was semi-upsetting to me as a parent. But especially the way they wrapped it up. But that's only my specific things that make me sad. Overall, it's not really a sad movie. And it's sweet and fun. It's a couple hours long. It's a good time. And I was definitely like, I remember I saw the trailer and I was like, this is a Korean movie, like this is Song Joong-ki. And then it was like, this trailer has a lot of English in it. And I was like, his voice is familiar. And then like I was watching the movie and it was like suddenly Richard Armitage. But I also thought that's really cool. Like, it's not that this is the future of all filmmaking, but we could have more films like this. Uh-huh. I think is really neat. So.
Oh.
It's a good movie night movie.
Cool. Good.
And it's Netflix, so.
That always makes life a lot easier when it's on the streaming service most people have. Cool. It was Space Sweepers, yeah?
Space Sweepers, yep.
Well, Matt and I was it January now? I don't even know what's going on anymore. we binged both seasons of Stage. Which is the
comic.
That's not good.
That's not good. That's everyone try muting yourself if you're not Valerie. And see where the echo comes from.
I don't hear my... Yeah, that's... Okay, it looks like it's coming from Angela again. Because I think you guys were already muted by then. Anyway. Okay. So, in, I believe, January, Matt and I binged all two seasons of Staged, which is starring Michael Sheen and David Tennant and their various... their spouses / girlfriends, Georgia Tennant, and I actually can't remember Michael Sheen's girlfriend's name right now. Anyway, but it's like a Zoom.
Anna Lundberg.
Thank you. It's a Zoom show where the premise of the first season is that they were about to do a play in London when lockdown started. So now they have decided to keep going. They're going to do rehearsals online just so that when everything reopens, they can be the first ones off the bat because they'll already be ready.
Oh,
their show can go right away, right? And then the second season is meta. It's basically the first season has aired and now everybody knows that that was like a show. And so the second season is, you know, like they want to make an American version of the show. And so, but they don't want to use that. But they want them to help the other people play them. In this, it's absolutely hilarious, and it's really like it's so hard to explain. But it's literally just them having Zoom calls and losing their minds in lockdown.
That's funny.
But like, there's like sweet things. Like, there's a really good story of like Michael Sheen's neighbor who catches him putting something in her trash can, so she like starts blackmailing him, but then he stops seeing her and he's worried about her, and like there's like little things like that, and just dealing with, you know, the realities of lockdown, and like especially for them, they really were much more locked down than we were, even because, you know, they could walk within 5 minutes of their houses, that's it. They're not allowed to drive anywhere else really unless it's to the grocery store. And it's just, their chemistry is amazing. I don't know if you guys watched Good Omens, but it was great. And that was the first time they ever worked together. And they obviously get along really well. And so that's where this show came from. And they're just hilarious. The second season has a bunch of like cameos from people who may or may not play, you know, David and Michael in the American version of the show. Which some of them I thought was like, really? How is that person more famous than David Tennant or Michael Sheen in the U.S.? But whatever. But it's just really, really fun. And it's a really quick watch. I think it took us like maybe 3 days to watch all of it. And this is just in the evening. After
it's like 15 minutes each episode. So.
Yeah.
What service is it on? Like, where can we find it?
It's on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Yeah. The second season just dropped, and in fact, we may have to watch it again because we watched the British version, and apparently the Amazon Prime version has extended scenes. But it's so good, we would totally watch it again because it's just really fun. And like I said, it's really easy to watch. I don't even know if it took us 3 days. It might have been two. And we just watched in the evening after I got home from work. But you watched it, Camille. What did you think?
Yeah, I watched both seasons well. I just finished the second season, Mano. Yeah, it took me like a day, because it's about 2 hours. And it's really light. I do agree, yes. Definitely it was their chemistry that drove the whole thing. Because if they didn't have that chemistry, you wouldn't be... I mean, these days especially, would you want to sit down and watch a Zoom series? But because it's them, it worked. And because the episodes are so short as well. So the writing's pretty tight for every episode. Mm-hmm. I've seen, like, I know Netflix had this series that I didn't even bother watching called, like, Social Distancing or whatever. And honestly, any series that's based on Zoom calls at this point, except maybe, like, Hello Stranger, that show that Angela and I watched, if you don't do it really well, it's really not worth doing, because this is the life we're living anyway.
Too. Like, those Game Boys and Hello Stranger did it already. Now it's like, it's been done, I'm over it.
Yeah. But no, what, because... It was so fun. You're right. It was hilarious because they were just so losing their minds. And in many ways, I'm like, this is also me.
Yeah, pretty much.
There was, especially in the second season, there was this one scene that Michael Sheen just blew up at Josh Gad for some reason because he was so frustrated with David. And mm-hmm. I was like, and all I want is a hug or something. And same.
Yeah.
Same Michael Sheen. Yeah, it's so relatable, and, you know, David's hair is terrible, his beard is out of, both of them.
And he wears the same hoodie the entire time.
That hoodie is so disgusting. It's like, you just wear the same thing this whole time. And, yeah, but it was great, and although in the second season I did feel like it was hilariously meta, but also sometimes I feel like they were just trying to fit in too many guest stars.
Yeah,
it felt very gimmicky. Yeah, so I'm like, yeah. It's always more fun when you just bring the two of them back on screen and like, okay, this just back to basics. This is what made the show. I don't really need to see too many cameos. And you really just felt like, yeah, all of these people wanted to get in on it because the first season was so fun. But when you spend too much time, even the premise, like, don't even take it that serious. The first season had that, you know, that loose premise of they're trying to rehearse for a play. But it really wasn't about that. It was just about David and Michael, like, just randomly chatting on Zoom about life. And that was more interesting.
And then their significant others being like, I think they're losing their minds.
Yeah. Even more so in the second season.
Like, yes.
They've completely lost it. And it's also fun to see that dynamic. Of like this bond that both Anna and Georgia had forged, because they were like, oh my god. And then towards the end of the second season, they became like so codependent. It was hilarious. Georgia was literally telling David, just please leave. But then I did feel like super emotional about the last scene in the second series where they actually met up. And I was freaking out because I said, this is basically how we're going to react to seeing our friends. Like, I mean, we've been on lockdown for a year here in the Philippines. Like, this is literally the anniversary. So I'm like, if I do see him, I have some friends that I've seen already, but like, I have some really good friends that I haven't seen in more than a year. And if it comes to that, like, even their scene was just, David was in the car and Michael was outside and they had to put on their masks. But even that moment was so great after you've seen them, like, just on Zoom calls for, 16 episodes, and then just having that moment that they're physically in the same space was just really great. So there.
Stage this is so true. It's good. It's the same kind of thing, because, like, you're gonna see people and you wanna hug them, but you can't still. Like, you're only kind of allowed to be in the same place together, barely, but you know, keep your distance. And so it's totally the same kind of thing. Mm. Especially because they really are doing it, like, mostly through the window of the car. So they're, like, through the door.
But, like, you could hear the excitement, like, even just through the window. Like, oh, there you are! Like, at least. For the first time after in a year or so that they were so close. And they you know, it was only a few minutes that they could interact, really. But, I mean, even that. I mean, it captures the whole quarantine mood, basically. Without being... Yeah, I don't know how to say it, but, like, without being really obnoxious or gimmicky about it. It's just David and Michael being us, being relatable, even if you know that some of this stuff, you know, is heightened and they're not really like that. But Yeah, I wish the second season was cool, and I mean, I don't mind seeing, I don't know if I want to see more of it. I want to see more of David and Michael, but I don't want them to just add more guest stars for the sake of, because...
I know they've been asked about doing more, and I kind of hope they don't, because I think it really would start to spoil it. Because, yes.
It already kind of started.
Yeah. It's, like, too much of a good thing. But it does. It does such a good job of capturing the moment. Even though that's not, you know, exactly something where, like, who's, I'm not rehearsing any plays with anybody, but at the same time, we are still trying, you know, we're doing this. Even though this is normal for us, it still feels weird because it's like, this is the only way we talk very much anymore. And this, you know, we've started doing, like, Discord get togethers to, like, talk about WandaVision. We did, and we're going to do Winter Soldier next week. And it's like, that, and how much you're relying on, like, Facebook and Twitter and just anything for social interaction. So it totally, it does a really good job of capturing the mood of the moment, but also making, you know, like, the reality of the situation, but also making you laugh. So, and yeah, they're just a joy to watch together. I may just put it on in the background next time I'm working. For the next, the thing I can't pay attention to, obviously. I'm paying attention to Cowboy Bebop when I do that now. But anyway, yeah, so it just, second season just dropped on Amazon Prime, and I highly recommend it. So.
I feel like I didn't know about it until y'all started talking about it today, but I'm definitely intrigued, so.
I mean, who doesn't love David Tennant and Michael Sheen, right?
They're great. Yeah. The chaotic energy alone was just, like, super worth it.
Yeah. It starts.
Yeah, definitely.
The first, oh god, what was the first episode called? So you learned some Welsh. The first
Kaki Hwich. I can't even pronounce it right. Kaki Hwich.
No, Kaki
Hwich. The Welsh. Kaki
Hwich.
I can't.
Yeah.
It's the Welsh term for the end of the world, basically. Kaki Hwich. You know, Welsh has no vowels. So.
It, I don't know. It does, just the wrong ones, and they have different just ones. Not, and they're all pronounced differently.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Kaki Hwich. I can't do it.
Kaki Hwich. I can't remember the last word. It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the first episode. And then, I mean, the episode titles were pretty funny. Like, what's that? The warthog and the mongoose and, like, the inside, just really deep inside jokes you just have to watch.
And you have to watch, like, the credits because, you know, there's like, they fight over who gets credit in what order, and it's literally reflected in the credits and the way that things happen.
As well.
It's just really silly. And, like, the show itself, because of that, even, like, that kind of thing makes it feel like everybody's just going nuts. Which is... Yeah, so... Anyway, so yes, I highly recommend that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Same.
So then, also having just hit streaming service, Disney Plus, was Raya and the Last Dragon. Although that you have to pay extra for. But what'd you guys think, Camille and Tatiana?
Disney Plus Plus. What did you think, Camille?
Well, I literally just finished it before this call, so
funny.
I really
enjoyed
it. It's super fresh. I really enjoyed it. Like, I guess I haven't had time to really process it. It's been less than an hour. But my first impression is I really, really, really liked it. Mm. And the animation is gorgeous, especially for the water. That struck me the whole time. It's like, okay, pretty art. Like, the water animation is so realistic. It's crazy. And yeah, of course, I've been excited about this for a while. I think I mentioned in the last podcast that this is one of, like, my top five Disney things, because Southeast Asian culture. Though it is really, for me, it's a mishmash. It's, it looks really closer to, like, Thai, Cambodian, Vietnamese culture than the Philippines. So, but there are a lot of influences, and it is fun. And I kind of get now why they didn't make it a musical, and that it would have been too much, to be honest. I like the choice that they made, because I was also really impressed by, like, the world building. Like, there is so much lore. It's so deep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot. I said, I need to watch this again to really process it, because there's a lot. And I mean, I applaud them for that, because they really made a really engaging and elaborate story. I mean, the themes are pretty simple, and at the end of the day, you know, learn to trust, work together, etc. Peace. But the way it was executed was, I feel like, creative enough. I mean, some of the side characters, I wasn't super fond of. I really liked, what's his name, Boone, the kid with the kanji, and watching scene was like, oh my god, it's the middle of the night, but I want some kanji. But the food animation also looked good, like Ghibli good. So it's like, you really want to eat. I want some Thai food or something. But yeah, what do I say? The characters, yeah. I like the whole one. It's good to have a female-centric story. At first, I felt like, is this going to be another Moana type thing? But no, they kind of went a bit beyond that. I like the rivalry between Namari and Raya and how it was resolved. And I mean, even the main conflict was just a lack of trust. It's something you can understand. So we didn't have any like one-dimensional villains. So that was good. The conflicts were kind of surprisingly complex. And yeah, great. A lot of great characters. Except I really don't like the con baby for some reason, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Great. So there. I like everyone else except that con baby. So I'm like, okay.
It just seems like it's very much stretching the
I know. I mean, imagination. Granted, it is like some sort of fantasy world. There are dragons and magical gemstones, and I'm like, yeah, but the con baby. I mean, I can suspend my disbelief up to a certain point, but
right.
Yeah, that's what that's what broke me. But yeah, the art is great, the story is pretty compelling. I like the music. The musical score is I feel like I could listen to a bunch of different Asian influences, so that was good. Clearly they did a lot of research, and yeah, the world building is so great, the fusion of cultures. Although I'm still kind of it's that thing with, again, like with Moana, where it's you don't really focus on one particular culture. Like Moana is also like a mishmash of, I don't remember, like Samoan and Polynesian and a bunch of cultures. So in this case, it was a bunch of Southeast Asian cultures as well, kind of thrown into a pot and mishmashed, and they just picked out elements. So it was beautiful, but also part of me is like, it doesn't really represent, like, for example, like when you have Mulan, who is clearly representing China, right? For all the problematic elements. Or, Jasmine, Agrabah is also not like a real place. But then, yeah, it's that thing I just remember now suddenly. Like, you have Disney princesses who are all from Europe, like Belle is from France, and I don't know, Rapunzel is from some other place. Oh,
They'll say they're from those areas, but like I wouldn't say that like Tangled is an accurate representation of German culture or Beauty and the Beast of French culture, even if you have some French in the background.
Right.
It does. Yeah. It's something like that. So no, it just felt like Moana is just every Polynesian culture in a pot.
Right.
And this is suddenly like every Southeast Asian
culture.
That's what Disney does. They throw it all in a pot and then they.
But then I'll take it because I like the way they did it. And it's high time for some Southeast Asian representation, and it was done really well. And like the voice cast was great as well. Awkwafina was hilarious as expected, and yeah, I like the dragon character. And at least they followed like the Asian design of dragons, so that was good. So I that's all I have for now because I'm still kind of processing. But I really liked it.
I was like, there. I feel like that you had a lot. That was a lot of processing you already did.
You process quicker than I do.
Exactly. I'm like, I can't even remember it anymore because I watched it a while back. But I did really like, I think I have almost all the same feelings as you, basically. I thought the art was gorgeous, and I really liked how you could tell that they did a lot of research in order to incorporate Southeast Asian cultures. And the mythology of Kamandra was, really well thought out. And it was engaging. I thought Kelly Marie Tran was so good. I really loved her voice work as Raya. Yep. It just felt like really, like she just had like a lot of emotional depth, and she was never over the top, and yet she still, could be funny or could be emotional or whatever. Yes, Awkwafina is hilarious, of course. I do wish that they had had more voice cast that was Southeast Asian, but I understand that they're like, we, you know, I guess name, big names. We want to have Awkwafina. I mean, also, like, just Awkwafina was clearly Sisu. Well. Yeah, and Gemma Chan. Yeah. But like clearly Awkwafina was Sisu. Like, Sisu was, like, based on Awkwafina. Yeah. So, so I understand. Yeah, like, there's, you're not going to do something else. But yeah, my favorite part was definitely the rivalry or the frenemieship between Namari and, Raya. I thought that was such an interesting, dichotomy. And just, like, the fact that they both are only acting this way because of how they were raised or what they believe about the world. Mm-hmm. Right. And they're both in a way, right.
Yeah.
And yet at the end, you have to come together and, you know, make friends with the dragon and hold hands and kumbaya, et cetera. And then everything will be okay. I think that the only thing I agree with you, Boone was my favorite of, like, the side characters. Yep. I would say that, like, maybe it's just because it has been a while now since I watched it, but, like, I can't really remember other side characters that well, you know? So I was like, I feel like they weren't as, like, maybe, like, some of the smaller characters, like, didn't pop as much as they might in some other, Disney movies. Mm-hmm. / Pixar movies, but because the protagonists I thought were so strong, it doesn't really matter. I don't really need the others to. But I do agree with you that Noi, the con baby,
the was, baby,
like, why?
Yeah.
This is just dumb.
Or I thought she would appear in that one scene where she does con Raya, and I didn't think that Raya would actually recruit her. I'm like, do you have to? Just leave her there. I mean, everyone had this sad backstory that, yes, my family was turned to stone by the Droon, whatever, but just leave the baby. I mean, yeah, she was helpful in the end, I suppose, but yeah but it's always more fascinating. It was fascinating to see Raya and Sisu's dynamic, Raya and Namari's dynamic, and even at the start when they were setting up, when it was like, although the pacing, it was a bit weird because I was like, we spent like half an hour on exposition or something, but fine, because the world that they built was so elaborate, you kind of needed, for especially for the younger audiences, like, yeah, you need to
really make,
to need to spell it out
exactly.
But yeah, it's fine.
But yeah, and I did like too that, like, her dad was, like, trying to bring people together, and, like, that was the reason that actually sent her in the opposite direction, because it didn't work out, you know, just, like, traumatized by the attempts at reconciliation, and now I hate reconciliation. But let this make sense. So yeah, overall, that was a good story. The art was really, really good, and I like that they, you know, the attempt was made mostly successfully to represent Southeast Asian cultures. So yay!
I'm really amazed they did most of this at home.
That's so true. Yeah, that's one of
also,
the.
Also, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was wondering, like, a silly part of me wondered if that's the reason they didn't have, like, songs. But then I was like, well, they still had a score, though. And then I fell down a rabbit hole of wondering how they managed to record that. So,
in this case, as much as I love, like, Disney musical films, I feel like it would have been too much.
Yeah, you shouldn't have already too much. Just because.
Yeah.
I agree.
So it worked in this case because there was way too much story already, and I do want to add that it was a really, like, I love the fight scene, the fight scenes as well, the choreography. It was it's really impressive, and like it and the fight scenes were mostly like women warriors, like it's usually between Raya and Namari or Raya and other female characters. So it's pretty cool to see, like. But a lot of the female characters were, you know, kick ass without that, you know, that annoying narrative, like, I don't want to be like other girls or none of that. So that was great. Like, no one was demonizing female characters who were more feminine looking or feminine coded, whatever. They were all just, there was diversity in that aspect. So that was great. That was refreshing to see, because otherwise, and like, I think you did mention that, Yana, like, the dad character was also pretty cool, because no toxic masculinity there. He was the one advocating peace and stuff. So I said, that's a better dynamic. It's a healthier kind of, and he had, like, a healthy relationship
with Raya, and at least in the end, like, no dead parents, really, because they brought everybody back. So that's nice.
We like a happy ending.
Yeah, right. Overall, it was really a lot of fun, and it's really good.
Cool. Yeah, I was supposed to watch it, but time was not on my side. Anyway, well, I will have to watch it very soon, because I really want to. Although, did it feel okay that it was... You were watching it on your smaller television screen, or would you have preferred to have seen it in a big theater?
I think it felt okay, but yeah, obviously it would have looked nicer maybe on a big screen, or been more like awe inspiring. But I thought that it would still look really great how it was. Plus, you know, it was done from home, so it can be watched from home.
That's true. I still am not going to the theater anyway, so I'm pretty happy that it's available to me at home.
I think our theaters are supposed to be able to open, so they're going to start doing the thing that they had offered last fall, which was you can rent out a screen for $100, and you can I think it's like you can have up to 20 people in the theater with you. Counting yourself, 20 people. But I'm hearing that like they're only doing current releases. So, but if Raya was one of the options, that would be a good one. But I think otherwise it's just like Tom and Jerry, and I forgot what the other one was. So it might be fun to do it if it was, we need a good movie, but yeah. Maybe this would be a good movie to do. Anyway, all right. This is when Angela is going to leave us, because it is time.
Fare thee well, Angela.
Hi, everybody. Have fun with WandaVision.
Take care. I hope you get to watch it soon.
I mean, I could if I decided to get Disney Plus. Like, I'm the only one stopping myself. So.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. All right. So, WandaVision was amazing. Okay. I will admit to having speculated the fuck out of that movie or that show, and 95% of my speculation was wrong, but I am still 100% okay with how it ended, and I loved it. I think that was the problem with this, like, and I actually think it they don't seem to have necessarily done that on purpose. Like, it's now having read interviews and stuff with the showrunner and the director, it sounds like there's a lot of stuff that was put in there that we were like, well, that's obviously referring to this, that they were like, no, we didn't have any clue that you would get this from it, because they didn't really know enough. But it's like, but the Feige and the other people who work for Marvel didn't think, oh, they're gonna read into this. I mean, I feel like in some ways the speculation mostly being wrong was probably a good thing to put people back into the, okay, you can speculate, but most of what you speculate is gonna not be wrong, and just enjoy the ride. Like, stop expecting so much that when it doesn't happen, you get disappointed.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that for sure. I mean, I thought, like, actually for me, it was like...
Fair.
Yeah, because I don't know enough about the Marvel, comics.
Yeah.
That, like, in the early episodes, and people were like, let's gather together and speculate, and then they, like, speculate, for longer than the episode was, and I was like, I don't know what these things are. I cannot contribute to this conversation. so then by, like, halfway through or whatever, where it was, like, clear that a lot of those things were not going to be the case, it was, like, much easier to just be like, okay, I can just sit back and relax. I don't need to know, what the beekeeper means. Or
right, yeah. You can just enjoy the ride, and you're like, oh, there.
Yeah, I saw somebody the other day who was still like, but we never got the beekeeper explained, and I was like, yes, we did. Yeah. Like, you tried to make it something else. It wasn't something else. That's the explanation. It just was. Yeah. She changed it, and that was how her mind decided to interpret it. That's all that was.
Just kind of convenient as a plot device, but anyway, I can take it.
I think the only, like, so overall, I was, just like you, I was really, really satisfied with how they did it, and I love that they were able to tell such an in-depth story about Wanda's grief, and how that, is the catalyst that then might transform her into the Scarlet Witch, but in a not in a like negative way where it might have been in the comics, right?
Yeah.
But in sort of a positive spin where she takes all of that and then turns it back on Agatha, and now she's like, okay, now I can be me, etc. I liked all that. The only one that I think was a cheap shot is casting Evan Peters as Pietro,
yeah.
When he's not actually, you know, there's no actual connection with him and Pietro. That was like,
And the fact that that was the one that I didn't get, the fact that Jack Schaefer, the showrunner, was like, I never thought anybody was going to make that connection and think, and it was like, how
that's
could you not?
Seriously?
That's a lie. That's definitely a lie. They had to know like that people were not.
Yeah, it sounds like she doesn't know, like, anything Marvel, really. And so that was part, but like, I can't believe that never came up in a conversation with Feige when they were casting him. Like, it just, that doesn't make any sense to me.
I feel like it definitely didn't. I don't know. I feel like that's just a lie. That's just straight up lies. Because how, of course, he played Pietro in a different version. Like, obviously people are going to think, oh my God, the multiverse. And we were told that this show was going to lead directly into the multiverse.
Yeah.
Into Doctor Strange multiverse. So of course people are going to think that Pietro is one of the gateways.
Yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, so, like, it's fine that it wasn't the case, but I just feel like it relies on, in order for it to be emotionally effective, it relies on the audience knowing that he played Pietro in another, you know, universe.
Yes. And yeah, so, I had to, like, my parents have never seen the X-Men movies, because I've never shown them to them, because I was like, they're a mess, I don't know what to do, show you. So I had to show them the scene from Days of Future Past on YouTube just so that they would kind of understand. But then I was like, oh, but it turned out it didn't matter anyway. Which I was like, okay.
Right. Which I wonder, I wonder how someone who doesn't know would interpret it. Because of course, like, as soon as you quote unquote recast Pietro, right?
Yeah.
And Wanda's, like, doesn't understand why he's been recast, so you know it wasn't Wanda that recast Pietro. I guess I would I would wonder how someone would interpret that when they're watching without any knowledge that he was also Pietro.
Yeah, my I think it's been so long since they've seen Age of Ultron that they didn't really understand what was going on, so, like, because they don't remember. And there was no, you know, the next episode before it, there's a tease, so that you like, you remember that was the original Pietro, but before having watched that episode, they had no idea. So they were just like, who's that? Like, yeah, they didn't have any clue.
I mean, how could they not be meta? Because during the Halloween episode, literally Wanda says something like, kick ass.
Yeah.
That's a reference to Aaron. So,
well, it's a reference to both of them. Evan Peters is in that movie too.
Right. So it's like, this is funny. So I said, okay, it's so meta, they're really going to reference it. And then, okay, then you said it was, that was kind of cheap. Like, after all the cool stuff you gave us, and you're not really, and his name is Ralph Boner or whatever. Yep. Although it is amusing that he is the Ralph that Agnes was constantly referring to. Oh, my Ralph, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So that's Ralph. Okay.
I saw somebody trying to speak, because, like, people are like, oh, they dropped the thread of who Jimmy's, like, witness protection person was, and it was like, no, I don't think that was, like, ever supposed to be a thing. It was just, that's how he found out.
It was an excuse.
But the person's not important.
It's just an excuse to bring him there. Yeah,
right. But, like,
who do you have to justify every little thread? I mean, why?
Yeah, Corey pointed out, he's like, people are speculating that Ralph is the person. It's like, but that looked like a headshot, that photo,
right?
And yes, somebody
somebody
in witness protection is going to become an actor. That's smart, because that's really going to keep you hidden,
right?
Yeah, so yeah, that was the only thing that kind of, like, out of all the speculation, there's things that I had, you know, it would have been cool if they played out, and there are things they obviously played with, like the cicada, you know, they obviously knew what they were doing there, because in the comics, the first time you meet Mephisto is as a fly.
Right.
There's no way they didn't linger on that, knowing
that
people might see that. Although they said that it was never supposed to be anything about Mephisto. But I'm like, no, come on. You did that on purpose. Otherwise, why are we lingering on this fucking cicada?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, what? I don't... Yeah. So little things like that were obviously meant to throw us off. And I'm like, you know, the people who are like, oh, all these drop threads. And it's like, well, some of those, you know, have you never heard of a red herring? That's literally the point of a red herring, is to draw you away from the obvious, what's really in front of you.
Right. If they hadn't had those other red herrings, I think from the start you would have been like, I mean, actually, I think people did know that Agatha, or, you know, Agnes was Agatha Harkness.
Yeah.
But they thought there was something else going on, right? They thought, like, oh.
Yeah, because in the comics, she's 10,000 years old. And
here she's only 200.
Yeah. Well, it looks like. Although apparently, Catherine Hahn has said that there was a lot with her backstory that they dropped. Mm-hmm. But you'd assume that that was supposed to, we're establishing that that's when she started her power.
Mm. Right.
Otherwise, it doesn't make sense that she's 10,000 years and that she's still too young to use her power. But, apparently there was a lot dropped with her, but she's also not a bad guy.
Yeah, it was interesting that she wasn't really the main villain of this one. I mean, you had her, you had, what's his name, Hayward, or standard white male.
Authority figure.
Whatever, Marvel villain, cookie cutter guy, but, I mean, I'm glad we had Agatha anyway, but even she wasn't, I mean, there's the whole episode of her, of exposition, basically, and, you know, revisiting, Wanda's trauma, but there's a whole episode of her even trying to figure out how it happened. So, for a moment, you think was someone else pulling the strings, but then in the end, it was all just really Wanda and her trauma, right?
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah,
yeah. Like Agatha's playing with it within the sphere herself, but she didn't start it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Wanda is.
Oh, so I do have a question about that. There's something that wasn't, I don't know if I missed something about Agatha or it just wasn't really that clear to me, was, yeah, she sensed that there was this magical event happening and she was like,
And she just, felt like she more magic there. Than like ever. And so then she was like, I'm just gonna
pop into this magical neighborhood and, you know, play along.
Yeah.
So that was it. Also, like, I don't know if it has been explained or I haven't really been reading. I don't want to fall into that rabbit hole of all the speculations and all the theories, because sometimes it can be really exhausting and can distract from just enjoying the show. But like, so where was she this whole time? I mean, when the Avengers movies were happening, or even like S.H.I.E.L.D., was she just, you know, doing her thing? I don't know. Did she care? Like, did she not, like, oh, since no major magical thing was happening, she was just, I don't know, living her life.
Yeah, that's the one thing I think that's a little bit like, what has she been doing all this time? There's been no other, like, you'd think that she would have shown up in Doctor Strange and been like, something, hey, like sorcerers.
That, yeah. Maybe she knows she can't absorb their power or something, so maybe that's why she's never...
Like, where was she in, like, Infinity Wars and Endgame? Or was she, like, what was she up to? Because, I mean, right, she is a powerful witch and who has been around for a couple of centuries. Unless it's hard to believe that she was just content to be living some sort of civilian life.
I mean,
or something.
I feel like that argument of where has she been would make more sense if they had tried to make her, oh no, she really was a good person all along, because it's like, well, then why didn't she help? Because it's her entire motive is selfish, it makes sense to me that she wouldn't have been, you know, she wouldn't have been involved, because she'd be taking care of herself. What does she care?
Yeah, maybe like she doesn't do anything like particularly evil either, right? Because it's not like she decided to do this. She was just like, oh, I feel someone more powerful than me, let me go check on this.
Yeah.
In that sense, she's pretty cool, because it's like, I'll just do my thing for a few centuries.
Well, and she's so popular that, like, I guarantee you she comes back in some way in the future.
Oh, definitely.
And Catherine Hahn was super awesome.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same as, like, Loki, you know?
Right.
Yeah. He's so popular, it's like you keep bringing him back, and now you even found a way to spin him off so he can do his mischief, but not necessarily be the bad guy anymore. So, yeah, I figured it'll be that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So apparently, I think they've said there were a couple, like, late changes to the story like the final episode, things like they added emphasizing the part with Catherine, or well, with Agatha, where she's, you know, saying you have no idea what you've done, and like really harping on about how destructive and bad Wanda's power could be potentially. And the I don't know if you noticed, but in the when Monica and Wanda are talking at the end, it does, like, there's one part that just kind of felt weird, and apparently it was filmed later. And it was when Wanda says, "I don't understand this power, but I will," that mm-hmm. was added.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm not sure, like, I think they're kind of setting it up to be more menacing. You have to assume part of that is, I mean, there had to be major rewrites done, because this was supposed, like, literally 2 weeks after this was over, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness was supposed to come out, right?
Right.
Yeah.
You could see how they would directly lead into each other. Now it's going to be a year before Doctor Strange. And in fact, we will get another movie that he's in before we get his own.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Because he'll be in Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Right, right. So they had to move things around.
So they they obviously had to change things. Apparently, Darcy, Wu, and Monica had more story in the finale, which makes sense because Darcy feels really weird.
Tapped on at the end.
Yeah, she almost feels like an afterthought. Like, yeah, oh wait, she just that's
ran
right.
them over, and that's it. And like, also, she's been driving the ice cream truck this whole time.
Just, yeah. So right? I almost, like, you have to wonder how much of that they changed because, like I said, now the show isn't going directly into the movie that it was supposed to. So they have said Darcy at least is coming back. Like, we know Monica is going to be in Captain Marvel 2. But Darcy, we have been told she's coming back. We just don't know when. It's just, it's not in Love and Thunder though.
Okay.
So she will be in something else. So it's possible that her story wouldn't have made sense. So they had to basically cut it. Because, you know, maybe that movie, like, it's not Doctor Strange, and it whatever it was needs to come at a different time now. So But it was weird because it was just like, wait, what happened to them?
Yeah.
And I just want
the pacing of the finale is a bit off. Yeah.
I want to show. Did you guys watch the making of thing they did? The assemble.
I have not watched that yet.
Yeah. Not yet. It's good. It was interesting watching it because we had speculated. They started filming the show before COVID, and then they had to stop, and then they went back and they finished it. Right. We had speculated that they must have done the finale first since it's so, like, special effects heavy. Right. But there's actually a shot where they're just like rehearsing when all of the all of the townspeople have been, you know, broken out of their mind control by Agatha, and so they're all, you know, like swarming on Wanda. And
You could have done that.
They're rehearsing after COVID, that part, right? And there are people wearing masks in the rehearsal.
Oh, okay.
So obviously that was filmed when they came back in. I think it was like November. October.
Okay. Yeah.
I think they finished in November. I can't remember when they start filming it. But yeah, so that was interesting.
I do have another question about the end when.
Huh?
So yeah, I have a question about the end where, the mind control is over, right? And then, you know, she's walking past like the empty lot, and all the people are like giving her like really bad looks, and then Monica says something like, "What's that? They don't know what you've sacrificed for them, etc." It's like, you can't really blame them because nobody wanted to be mind controlled for weeks, right?
Yeah. So there's people who are pissed that Wanda doesn't face any consequences for it, and it's like,
right.
Well, she.
I mean, I'm
off.
Okay with that because she does still have her trauma, but. I found it a bit weird that Monica was kind of like, no, but you sacrificed for them. Yeah, no. I don't think. I mean, I, as a random townsperson from Westview, had been mind controlled for weeks. Not gonna give you a pass, really, for that.
Right. But, I think that was based on Monica's own grief. She says it. If she could have done it, she would have done it too, probably. And so she, that's why Monica's the only one who really, or the one who sympathizes the most,
because right,
she
right.
understands that grief. But yeah, I just think it was funny because the people who are like, why isn't she punished for it? And it's like, who was going to stop her from leaving? Who there was going to stop the Scarlet Witch from just fucking off? Like, I think it wasn't so much that, like, they need to punish her. It's they know they can't.
Right, they were just relieved she's leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're just glad to see her leave. And, I mean, she's going to be punishing herself. Like, she's obviously going to be guilty about it anyway.
Exactly.
But still, like, yeah. It's kind of weird for Monica to think, like, oh, they can forgive you because, whatever, you sacrifice so much. Yeah. No,
I mean, I think it is mostly
they just, don't have like, to forgive you. Yeah.
Right. I agree. Obviously, they don't have to forgive her. But I think that it was more just, like, her trying to be like, I'm on your side. Wanda, rather than like
shared
forgive her.
Yeah. But yeah, it was interesting. And it was really complex because we haven't seen something like this in Marvel before. And yeah, it's good to have to give one. Well, I felt like Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany were just having so much fun, at least for the for the retro episodes. They were just having so much fun.
The fact that, like, so the first episode, the Dick Van Dyke, the 50s episode, they, you know, they filmed it, like, that was why they apparently met with him. Everybody was speculating that Dick Van Dyke was going to make an appearance, but I think it's better that he didn't. But that was why the director and Feige met with him, was really to get, like, information on how the show was filmed, because they tried to do as authentic as possible. So they had a live studio audience, and the audience and everybody on the crew was dressed in 50s garb for it, and then they did all of the effects, you know, instead of visual effects they were special effects, so they're practical effects, like having all the stuff that was like floating in the air was really like on strings and stuff, and it was just kind of cute that they like tried to be as authentic as possible. But yeah, you could tell they were having an absolute blast doing it. They were very cute. But yeah, I went from not really caring about Wanda to like literally sobbing when she became the Scarlet Witch. I was crying so hard.
Yeah, they did a really great job of getting in depth into, especially Wanda. Vision a little bit too, but mostly Wanda.
Yeah. She was so beautiful. And they've already announced the Hot Dory, and you better bet I'm getting that shit. I think we're buying Vision too, although I'm not as excited about Vision. The whole ship of Theseus thing, by the way, straight out of the comics. Like, that literal conversation happens in the comics. Somebody posted the page of it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I thought that was really neat. Yeah, I mean, that's the one, like, hanging thread, I guess, is the, nobody knows that Vision remembers now? And is, I guess, good?
Mm-hmm.
White Vision, and so that he's out there. But it's like, yeah, well, you know, that was the other thing, is you really, there are more stories to be told. Not everything is going to be completely wrapped up. They wrapped up the story that they wanted to wrap up, which was
Wanda
and her reaction to, you know, losing yet another person, because that happens a lot to her, unfortunately,
right? But at least maybe she'll get her kids back.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
I guess they went back and forth on that one a lot, on whether or not to have her hear the kids. I'm glad they did, you know.
Right, I mean, because we know they have to come back in some form, because Young Avengers is clearly coming. So, yes. May as well give you that little kernel of hope.
I think that's the only sucky thing, though, is they're going to have to age them up again. Because they've got to be teenagers to be the same age as the rest of the Young Avengers of what we're getting. And I'm like, but those two kids are so good. I don't want to lose them. I hope we at least get a little bit.
Yeah, since they made it can just be like the little siblings, the annoying little siblings. Because like, after all, isn't Kamala Khan, isn't she really young too?
She does look fairly young, but I think she's still like 14 or something. So obviously, Hailee Steinfeld's... she's going to be the oldest, because she's like mid to late 20s
now? Right. She's Kate Bishop, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Kate Bishop. Kate Bishop's gonna be old.
Isn't the actress playing
Yeah, those two
America?
Boys were super adorable.
Yeah. I just remember
Haley Steinfeld is 24.
Saying... Okay, yeah. She's okay. Very old.
Compared to some of the others, yeah. Yeah, we're getting America in Captain Marvel, right?
Yeah. No, wait, not America. We're getting Kamala in Captain Marvel, right?
Oh, wait. Is America coming in Doctor Strange then?
I think so. America's coming in Doctor Strange. Kamala's
coming. That would make
in.
Sense because she's supposed to be from another universe, so that makes the most sense. Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, and that was why it's like makes no sense, yeah, that they didn't expect us to start to think of the multiverse because it's like, but we know it's coming. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I really want to go watch it again, binge the whole thing, because, like, you know, now knowing what you know about Agatha and everything, I just really want to binge it all again, knowing the whole story. I just gotta find the time.
I support this plan.
Yeah, I think it would be a lot of fun. Maybe when we can do things again, we can do it in my parents' attic or something. Just do a day. Not too
I think that we definitely should.
Yeah. Everybody get vaccinated as soon as we can, which won't be for a while, probably. Sorry.
We're not getting vaccinated we're in like the last priority list at this point. So maybe by next year.
Oh,
fingers crossed.
That sucks. Yeah, we're supposed to all be able to. Like, it'll be open to us by May 1st.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean you're getting it doesn't mean you're getting an appointment. I still can't believe I actually got both my parents vaccinated. So thank God. That's done. Makes life a lot easier. It's a relief to know, you know. Anyway, any other thoughts or shall we wrap up?
I think we're good to go.
Same. Oh, I guess I was going to just briefly, I mean, we do have the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which I almost feel like people are going to be disappointed with it now.
Because WandaVision set the bar so high?
Yeah, because it's so, like, WandaVision was so different, and it's kind of cool, and then Winter Soldier is much...
And nobody expected anything of WandaVision.
Yeah.
Right? So.
And then the Falcon and the Winter Soldier is going to be very much traditional.
It's only like 6 episodes, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's 40 to 50 minute episodes.
Right. Like, yeah, should be fine. It should be fun at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looks hilarious, although mm-hmm. I still expect... WandaVision for me was a really easy watch. Like, I basically watched every episode 4 times, and it didn't really matter. Like, it didn't feel repetitive at all, right? It was always fun. I feel like The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, at least, maybe not the first episode, but maybe when you get further into it, seems like it's going to be much heavier because of the storyline. Where, you know, obviously we had the grief storyline for Wanda, but it was the way it was played.
Right.
Was different. Whereas for the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we're obviously dealing with a racism storyline.
Yeah.
And it looks like, I mean, that's going to be heavy.
Right. And it's played straight. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I transcribed, I did not interview and thus did not watch, but I did transcribe some interviews with the showrunner and the director. Uh-huh. And just based on their responses, or, you know, based on the questions that I was transcribing, it sounds like it's going to definitely have a lot of layers to it as well, you know?
Yeah.
And not be experimental like WandaVision, but at least have a lot to say.
Yeah. Because it looks like they're using a comic from the not very long ago.
Truth, Red, Black, and something like that.
Yeah, is it Red, White, and Black?
I think that's what it is. Truth, Red, White, and Black.
Yeah. And, you know, dealing with the idea that, you know, yeah, at the time, you wouldn't have tested the super hero serum for the first time on a white person when you could test it on a black person, just in case they died. So, it sounds like that's going to be kind of incorporated. And then obviously we're dealing with the idea that the government obviously doesn't want Sam to be Captain America and decides on some rando white person instead. U.S. agent. At least they give him his own name? I mean, are they going to actually try and call him Captain America? Or are they just going to call him? And he doesn't have the shield, because Sam has the shield. Although, I love, there's a scene in one of the trailers, I think it's the Super Bowl trailer. I was looking at it and I'm like, okay, so this looks like it's a training montage where Sam is trying to figure out how to use the shield and just failing miserably, and then Bucky like is pissed off because he just like throws it and it like perfectly and it comes back to him, and then he just gives Sam a look and it's like, yeah, Bucky, you probably so then like all I could think was, did the all the Howling Commandos train with it? Because that would have been amazing if like it's like,
oh no, yeah, that would have been
I'm like, I like that idea, because otherwise when would Bucky have learned to use the shield? Unless it was back then. So anyway, but yeah, I'm still really excited for it. I just, it's going to be such a change of pace, and that, you know, but then again, half the Marvel movies are, so whatever. And then I'm just going to end on, screw Avatar for taking Endgame's number one spot, only because, not because...
Nobody cares about Avatar.
I know, I just don't understand. It was a bad movie. It was a really, really bad movie.
I can't believe that there's going to be sequels.
There's going to be four.
That's so ridiculous.
They're making four. Like, Corey actually said it when we were talking. He was like, doesn't James Cameron want to make anything else? Like, that's all he's been doing because of this. But I'm just not a James Cameron fan because of, like, this whole... He was supposed to be working on a Mars thing with NASA. And literally, he just kept not showing up to the fucking meetings. So much so that they just basically...
What? Canceled.
Yes. He thought he was too good to show up to the meetings. I'm not even kidding. So, yeah, fuck James Cameron. Yeah. It's such bullshit. He's such a dick. So I'm like, I don't even need it to be Endgame. I just want something else to be number one.
I support you. Him.
Yeah, so. But I mean, at least in the end, Zoe Saldana is still number one, so I guess there's that. We love her, so it's okay. Anyway, all right, on that note, thank you for joining us. As always, you can find news, reviews, interviews, etc. on withanaccent.com. Follow us at withanaccent on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And it's withanaccent TV on YouTube. And the podcast is at Papa La Carte Pod on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for joining us. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.